And I thought I'd talk today about the Ark of the Covenant, which is mostly Old Testament, but then some important New Testament too. And I don't know that I've ever heard a sermon about the Ark of the Covenant. As I think back, and I'm getting to the point where I've been around a long time now, I don't recall that I have. So just what was that? What was it for? That's my title today, The Ark of the Covenant, and I'm following in part here and there a message from Mr. Ron Barker. It's given September 2018, so that's 7 years ago now, and it was a Bible study at the feast that year. Happy to provide the link if anyone wants that. Mr. Barker was, I don't know if he still is, the pastor in Dayton, Ohio church. That's where I was born, Dayton, Ohio. Many long years ago. So the Bible describes the Ark of the Covenant as a wooden chest covered by solid gold and having a lid known as, well, suppose the lid was known as the judgment seat, the retribution seat, the things God could have called it, the payback seat for all you've done. But the lid of this Ark of the Covenant is known as the mercy seat. So I think it's a name that tells us something about God. The seat was shielded or protected or covered by two covering cherubim, and that was in one of the songs we sang as we started today. Two winged angel figures, they too were made of solid gold. And I ran an image search online and brought a slide to give an idea of the appearance of the Ark of the Covenant. James, could you? It's a very pretty thing. And you can see the two kneeling angels with their wings, these cherubim. And it's made to be carried or transported. What you're looking at here, I thought about this as I was looking at it, is God designed. That God designed this thing. It's described in Exodus 25, where God tells Moses exactly how he wanted it made. His ark made. He's very specific. Look in Exodus 25. And we'll see this, Exodus 25, in verse 1. Then the Lord, so we see who's talking here, spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel that they bring me an offering." But what's happening here is God's getting ready to have them build the tabernacle, this mobile tabernacle and the ark, that they bring an offering for from everyone who gives it willingly with his heart, you shall take my offering. And this is the offering which you shall take from them, gold, silver, bronze. And these are things that they took out of Egypt as they left and pillaged or took things from Egypt. Blue, purple, and scarlet thread, fine linen, and goat's hair, ram skins, dyed red, badger skins, and acacia wood. Many special things for building this tabernacle. Verse 9. According to all that I show you, that is the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all its furnishings, just so you shall make it. God says, according to all that I show you. So this is a place where this ark will be kept, this ark of the covenant, and it's a place where God will dwell with them. And it sounds like a pretty good deal to me, where you have the all-powerful creator of the universe dwelling with you and protecting you and guiding you. And then I have a section head in my Bible above verse 10, and it says the Ark of the Testimony. So that's another name for the Ark of the Covenant. And just why would that be? Verse 10, and they shall make an ark of acacia wood. 2.5 cubits shall be its length, 1.5 cubits its width, and 1.5 cubits its height. So, James, if you can bounce it one slide forward, and we can really just leave it on that slide just so I can refer to it or we can look at it. Now, and then the 2.5 cubit length is about 50 inches, and I put that on the slide. And then about 30 inches for the other dimensions. Verse 11, you shall overlay it with pure gold inside and outside. Verse 12, you shall cast 4 rings of gold for it, and put them on the four corners. Verse 13, You shall make poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold. You shall put the the poles into the rings on the side of the ark, that the ark may be carried by them. The poles shall be in the rings of the ark. They shall not be taken from it. So for testimony, verse 16, and you shall put into the ark the testimony which I will give you. And this is another name for the Ark of the Covenant, then, the Ark of the Testimony. This testimony refers to the stone tablets inscribed by the Ten Commandments by God Himself, which God gave to Moses on Mount Sinai. And then comes instructions for the top or lid of the box, this thing called the mercy seat, with its covering cherubim. Verse 17, you shall make a mercy seat of pure gold. They must have taken a lot of gold out of Egypt with all this. 2.5 cubits shall be its length, and 1.5 cubits its width, so the same as the dimensions of the box to fit. And you shall make 2 cherubim of gold. Of hammered work you shall make them at the ends of the mercy seat. In verse 20, beginning of verse 20, and the cherubim shall stretch out their wings above, covering the mercy seat with their wings. So God, again, always very specific. Does any of this ark description here sound familiar? And these cherubim placed on it. Hold your place here and go to Exodus. I'm sorry, go to Ezekiel. In chapter 28, and I know this will be immediately familiar when we get there. Ezekiel 28, in verse 12, the second half of verse 12, you were the seal of perfection, so you know who we're talking about. Full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. Talking about Lucifer here. Verse 13, you were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering. And then many beautiful stones here, part of Satan's or Lucifer at the time's adornment. Verse 14, you were the anointed cherub who covers. So if you can see on that slide, those two cherubim guarding the mercy seat, well, one of those was Lucifer. You were the anointed cherub who covers. So you can see on that slide a position of very highest honor at God's throne. What God had called them or instructed them to build was, of course, not literally the throne of God that we could read about. We could go to Revelation 4. I won't do that, but was intended to represent that throne and, importantly, to be kept among them as they help remember. The ark represented God's presence and his power and authority, traveling with his chosen people. So then back to Ezekiel 25. I'm mixing up Ezekiel and Exodus. Back to Exodus 25. The two E's, back to Exodus 25. And verse 20, and the cherubim shall stretch out their wings above, covering that mercy seat with their wings. So we read that. And verse 21, you shall put the mercy seat on top of the ark, and in the ark you shall put the testimony that I will give you. And there I will meet with you, and I will speak with you from above the mercy seat, from between the two cherubim. And that was in the song we sang as well, God's place there, which are on the ark of the testimony about everything that I will give you in commandment to the children of Israel. So God would speak to them from above the ark's mercy seat, here telling Moses about the testimony, the commandments he would give to Israel as instructions for how to interact with God and how to interact with each other. Just part of this covenant that he was about to make. And we know the commandments predated the old covenant and became part of the old covenant, and then postdated the old covenant and are still binding today. It's kind of, how could it be otherwise? But that's what the world believes. The religious few now, I guess, who out there still hang on to parts of Christianity, that you shall not kill is no longer a commandment and so forth, doesn't really make sense. They're not done away with at all. In Exodus and in 1 Kings, we could find that this ark contained the actual tablets of the law on which God himself wrote the Ten Commandments at Mount Sinai. In Exodus and in Numbers and Hebrews, we find that this ark contained Aaron's rod that was part of Israel's exodus from Egypt. You know, I always pictured that rod as kind of a tall stick, as tall as they are. But you can see from this ark on the side that it would have been a shorter stick they had. Contained that rod that turned into a snake that budded, that was used to turn the Nile River to blood. It also contained a gold bowl of manna. And there are a gold bowl containing the manna, the food God sustained Israel with for 40 years in the wilderness. So this ark has three things in it, we're told, that represent very critical family history of what God had done, working with and leading, caring for Israel. Wouldn't it be something to be able to look inside that and see those tablets of stone with the Ten Commandments and that actual rod used by Aaron before Pharaoh? So this ark was built when Israel had reached and was camped at the base of Mount Sinai. And when God told them to move, it was carried on the shoulders of Levites, and they walked about 2,000 cubits, or a little over half a mile ahead of the people as they marched, all very precise, which God expected to be carefully followed. And after all, this represented his throne, represented his presence among them, with them. So it's a very sacred, very holy thing. The transporting was to be done with those gold-coated rods, like the ones I think you can see on this slide, inserted through the gold rings. And it was so special in all that it represented. It was so sacred that no one was permitted to even touch it. Of course, if you did allow people to touch it, you can imagine they'd have hands all over. If that'd be what they would do. It was so sacred that anyone who would touch it or did would die. Makes me suspect those carrying rods might be a little longer than what this picture shows here to prevent the chosen Levites from accidentally touching it as they had the rods on their shoulders. So when Israel was camped, the ark was kept in the most holy compartment of the temple, of the tabernacle called the Holy of Holies. And this tabernacle, by necessity of Israel's moving through the wilderness for 40 years, was a transportable tent of worship made at Mount Sinai, the same time as the ark was made. And we saw that in verses 8 and 9 here in Exodus 25. This special space within it, this Holy of Holies, was screened off from view of the people and even the priests. It was specifically used by Israel only one day a year. Which day was that? For this atonement. On the Day of Atonement. And even then, the Israelites weren't allowed to see it. Only the high priest could pass through that veil into where the ark was, the presence, and then sprinkle blood on it for the sins of Israel. So this ark represented God's actual throne, showing Israel that he was among them. But it made me think, the Ark of the Covenant isn't with God's people anymore. As important as it was, we no longer use it. We rarely make mention of it. I started by saying, I don't know if I've ever heard a message about the Ark of the Covenant. Even on the Day of Atonement, we don't tend to talk about this ark. Should we? Does this ark, once just central to the worship and plan of God for his chosen people, continue to be important today. God was very clear in his instructions. They weren't to use it, well, in any of many ways. Not long after they made that golden calf and worshiped that, it certainly wasn't to be set up as a pillar in the middle of their encampment so everyone could worship and bow down and pray to it. Really quite the opposite. It was removed from any access to the people, with the exception of that high priest. One time a year, none of them even saw it. None even saw it, but they were fully aware of it and its presence in the tabernacle behind the veil in the Holy of Holies. So just how was this thing used? And what all was it for? Let's see this, how they used it on the Day of Atonement while camped in the wilderness. This is in Leviticus 16. Leviticus 16 and verse 3. Thus Aaron shall come into the holy place, this is that Holy of Holies, with the blood of a young bull as a sin offering and of a ram as a burnt offering. He shall put the holy linen tunic and the linen trousers on his body. He shall be girded with a linen sash, and with a linen turban he shall be attired. These are holy garments before he could go in there. Therefore he shall wash his body with water and put them on, and he shall take from the congregation of the children of Israel two kids of the goats as a sin offering and one ram as a burnt offering. As he goes in, verse 12, then he shall take a censer full of burning coals of fire from the altar before the Lord with his hands full of sweet incense beaten fine and bring it inside the veil. And he shall put the incense on the fire before the Lord, that the cloud of incense may cover the mercy seat that is on the testimony, lest he die. So very careful how we would do this. And this was to cloud his view of the mercy seat. As he's in there, it's the only one who can go in to remind him that he's not there to stare at or gaze on God's place. He had a different job as he's there. Verse 14, he shall take some of the blood of the bull and sprinkle it with his finger on the mercy seat on the east side, and before the mercy seat he shall sprinkle some of the blood with his finger seven times. Then he shall kill the goat of the sin offering, which is for the people, bring its blood inside the veil, do with that blood as he did with the blood of the bull, and sprinkle it on the mercy seat and before the mercy seat. So he shall make atonement for the holy place because of the uncleanness of the children of Israel and because of their transgressions and their sins, sprinkling the blood once a year on atonement. Verse 17, there shall be no man in the tabernacle. So the entire tabernacle, no one else was to be in there outside of that Holy of Holies and the veil. When he goes in to make atonement in the holy place until he comes out, that he may make atonement for himself and for his household and for all the assembly of Israel. No one else in the entire tabernacle, so they wouldn't be trying to peer in to the most holy place Aaron had entered and try to see the very special Ark of the Covenant. When Israel camped then, this Ark stayed behind that curtain in the Holy of Holies. When God commanded Israel to move during those 40 years wandering in the wilderness, as they were being led by Joshua to the promised land, the ark moved with them. Let's see that in Numbers 4. Numbers 4 and verse 4. This is the service of the sons of Kohath in the tabernacle of the meeting relating to the most holy things. When the camp prepares to journey, Aaron and his sons shall come, and they shall take down the covering veil and cover the ark of testimony with it. And so if you read commentaries about this, they'll indicate that they will take down the covering veil and go forward so they can't see the Ark of the Covenant and lay it over and cover that Ark of the Covenant They shall take down the covering veil and cover the ark of the testimony with it. Then they shall put on a covering of badger skins and spread over a cloth entirely of blue, and they shall insert its poles. So this is getting ready to move the Ark of the Covenant. God's instructions how to move that. Specific instructions from God carried by the sons of Kohath, who were Levites, and selected individuals. Instructions that had to be covered, and as to who would do that and how to do it. Israel, again, never saw it. Or its cherubim, or the mercy seat. All of gold. It was so holy that any improper looking upon it could cause death. Verse 17 here. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, "Do not cut off the tribe of the families of the Kohathites from among the Levites, but do this in regard to them, that they may live and not die when they approach the most holy things. Aaron and his sons shall go in and appoint each of them to his service and his task, but they shall not go in and watch while the holy things are being covered, lest they die." So you can see how solemn this ark was. Let me overview then other mentions of the ark as time goes forward. During the crossing of the River Jordan, the river opened and became dry with each advancing step of those carrying the ark, and stayed that way until the people had passed over. That's Joshua 3. Not too long after, when Israel marched around Jericho, the ark was carried with them for 6 days around the city, preceded by seven priests sounding seven ram's horns, trumpets, and then seven times on the seventh day, after which all of Israel shouted and the walls came down of Jericho, Joshua 6, ark having a central role there. Israel lamented before this ark when they were defeated at Ai, Joshua 7. When Joshua read God's law to Israel between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim, they placed the ark in the midst of them. To hear that, Joshua 7, verses 6 to 9. The ark is next described in Bethel under the care of priest Phinehas, who was the grandson of Aaron, then had responsibility for this. Judges 20. A few years later, Israel, as Israel does, was not following instruction from God and decided to take the ark into the battlefield, kind of a good luck charm, as they fought the Philistines, and they were defeated when they did that. 30,000 men were lost. The ark was captured by the Philistines, 1 Samuel 4. When news of the capture of the ark reached Shiloh, the aged priest there, Eli, fell dead from hearing this, from hearing the news. His daughter-in-law was bearing a son and named him Ichabod, which means the glory has departed Israel. That's 1 Samuel 4, so you can see it was a very solemn, very special thing to the people. The experience of the Philistines with possession of the ark is interesting. If we went through that, I'd just say everywhere they brought it, bad things happened to them with that ark. When they put it in the temple of their fish god, Dagon, it's a half-human, half-fish god, they found his statue on the ground in front of the ark the next morning. They stood the statue back up, and then on the next morning found it again on the ground, and the head and hands were broken off that morning. Wherever they moved the ark, the people suffered afflictions and things like tumors and sores, and they came to the point after 7 months, as wonderful as this thing is that we've captured, they said, "We don't want it. Give it back. Send it back." 1 Samuel 5. If we jump ahead then to King David, and one of the more familiar stories about the ark, this is one that often has people wondering, why did God do that? Why did God do that? And what I'm referring to is the death of Uzzah, who was one of the men transporting the ark under King David's command, when the ox pulling the transport cart stumbled and Uzzah put out his hand to steady the ark and was immediately struck dead. with that, reading these verses, it seemed like he was just doing what he was asked to do and trying to help, and then boom, he was killed. So, see what you think about this. This is in 1 Chronicles. First Chronicles in chapter 13. The story of Uzzah here in the ark. Chapter 13, verse 1. Then David consulted with the captains of thousands and hundreds and with every leader, and David said to all the assembly of Israel, "If it seems good to you, and if it is of the Lord our God, let us send out to our brethren everywhere who are left in the land of Israel, and with them to the priests and Levites who are in the cities and their common lands, that they may gather together to us, and let us bring the ark of our God back to us, for we have not inquired at it since the days of Saul." Then all the assembly said they would do so, for the thing was right in the eyes of the people. So the ark was being held in a carefully selected man's house for safekeeping when David decided he was going to move it. This man's name was Abinadab. Verse 5. So David gathered all Israel together from Shiloh to Egypt to as far as the entrance of Hamath to bring the ark of God from Kirjath-Jearim. And David and all Israel went up to Bala to Kirjath-Jearim, which belonged to Judah, to bring up from there the ark of the God of God the Lord, who dwells between the cherubim, where his name is proclaimed. So they carry the ark of God on a new cart from the house of Abinadab, and Uzzah and Ahio drove the cart. Then David and all Israel played music before God with all their might, and singing on harps, on stringed instruments, on tambourines, on cymbals, and on trumpets. And when they came to Chidon's threshing floor, Uzzah put out his hand to hold the ark, for the oxen stumbled. So they've placed the ark on a new cart, and people are rejoicing and singing around it. In verse 10, then the anger of the Lord was aroused against Uzzah, and he struck him because he put his hand to the ark, and he died there before God. So many translations say, the anger of the Lord burned against Uzzah. It's a strong word that's used. God was very displeased about what was happening. But still in all, wasn't Uzzah just trying to help? You know, kind of caught there, maybe without really knowing too much about this ark. And if we step back for a moment and look at what was happening here, remember all the instructions that God had given them about how this ark was to be handled and how solemn it is. What's wrong with what we see here? Well, many things, actually. First, the ark isn't covered, as all of Israel is dancing around it and gazing upon it, at God's cherubim that cover, at his mercy seat, instead of only the high priest allowed to come before it one day of the year, and having properly prepared himself for that only on the Day of Atonement. Second, they have it on a cart. It's not being moved with the gold-covered rods placed through the gold rings. And then it was not to be touched. Looked at or touched, and they had created a situation where Uzzah reached out and put his hand on God's sacred ark, on something that was to be most holy to them. Israel had the Torah. They had the first five books from Moses of the Bible. They had the instructions, but they weren't following them with something most holy. So I'll just read from Proverbs 3. My son, do not forget my law, but let your heart keep my commandments for length of days and long life and peace. They will add to you. Trust the Lord with all your heart and lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. Do not be wise in your own eyes. So that surely fits Mr. Davies' message. It will be health to your flesh and strength to your bones. So they weren't doing any of that. They decided to move the ark. God didn't tell David to do this. And then they did everything their own way. So what we just read again, my son, forget not my law, but keep my commands. Makes you think of Proverbs 14 and Proverbs 16. There is a way that seems right to us. Mr. Davies' message again. But the end is the way of death. God also tells us in Deuteronomy 28, the blessings and curses chapter, opening verses, that tremendous blessings come from God if we live as he directs. It's for our benefit. He makes us. He made us. He knows what works best for us. And if we continue in that chapter, there's the flip side of the curses that result when we do things our way, which we certainly are now as a people. But with all that, was Uzzah still wrongly treated with what happened there? Or should he have known better to even be there in this situation? Or if he's ordered into it, should he have been much more careful around God's ark? I wonder how he ended up being there in the first place, so close to that ark that he could reach out and put his hand on it. Look in 2 Samuel, back in the direction of Genesis here. 2 Samuel chapter 6. Chapter 6 and verse 1. And so this is a parallel here. We're in the same situation. Again, David gathered all the choice men of Israel, 30,000, and David arose and went with all the people who were with him to Bethel, Judah, to bring up from there the ark of God, whose name is called by the name the Lord of hosts, who dwells between the cherubim. So they set the ark of God on a new cart and brought it out of the house of Abinadab. So why a new cart? Did they kind of know that this wasn't how the ark was to be moved, but justified what they were doing by putting it on a cart that hadn't been used before? It was a significant departure from the way God said the ark should be moved, using the poles on the shoulders of carefully selected Levites. Maybe even worse, it's the same way the Philistines transported the ark when they moved it from city to city. Continuing here in verse 3, out of the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill, and Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, drove the new cart. So what was that? Uzzah is the son of Abinadab. He lived in the house where God's Ark of Covenant had been kept for 20 years with God's most holy Ark of the Covenant. And he lived with someone who would have clearly told him how solemn and important that ark was. There are a number of Abinadabs in the Bible. Commentaries note the second of the 8 sons of Jesse was named Abinadab. So this appears to have been David's older brother who was selected to keep that cart in safety. Uzzah had actually lived where God's sacred cart was secured away, and he of all people should have known that it was very sacred, that it symbolized God's presence, and that it had very holy things stored inside of it. Possibly over time, he allowed it to become less holy, less sacred in his view, familiar. And there's a message in there for us too, because that's something we can do. After years in the church, with the Sabbath, with God's holy days, how we look at the Sabbath, day dawning, what we might start seeing is okay to do on God's Sabbath day as it becomes familiar, rather than focus on God, on his spirit family plan. Just step back and consider the sacrifice he and Christ made, and how holy and special it is to be given God's truth, that we can't ever let these things become common, familiar. So Uzzah found himself alongside the cart, helping move God's Ark of the Covenant. And when the ox stumbled, out went his hand onto that ark. Some commentaries suggest Uzzah knew much better than being part of this whole process and placing his hand on the ark, something he should have known would have killed even Aaron. As he went into the Holy of Holies, serving God and the people once a year, one day a year. So there are valuable lessons here that we should not let any part of God or his truth, his calling, become common to us, become familiar or less important than it once was. So starting to wrap up, two more quick scriptures as we've seen what the ark represents. God's throne, God himself, his presence. We've seen how it was used, but it's gone today. Why is that? Look in Jeremiah 3. Jeremiah 3 and verse 16. And this is a look into the future. Then it shall come to pass, and even into our time, that when you are multiplied and increased in the land in those days, says the Lord, that they will say no more, the ark of the covenant of the Lord, it shall not come to mind, nor shall they remember it, nor shall they visit it, nor shall it be made anything or any more. This is a time when the ark would be present no more, and God's people wouldn't miss it. Do we miss it? As I mentioned at the start, I don't know if I've ever heard a message about it. And it's true, we don't think about it, we don't miss it. And that's actually for a good reason, which we find in Hebrews in chapter 9. Hebrews 9, maybe it's for a reason that's kind of hidden in plain sight. As I've been talking, which is the name? It's the Ark of the Covenant. Well, which covenant is that? Verse 1 here in Hebrews 9. Then indeed, even the first covenant had ordinances of divine service, and the earthly sanctuary for a tabernacle was prepared, and the first part, in which was the lampstand, the table, and the showbread, which is called the sanctuary. And behind the second veil, behind the veil, was part of the tabernacle, which is called the holiest of all, the Holy of Holies, which had the golden censer and the Ark of the Covenant overlaid on all sides with gold, in which were the golden pot and that had the manna, Aaron's rod, the budded, and the tablets of the covenant. And above it were the cherubim of glory overshadowing the mercy seat. Of these things we cannot now speak in detail. Now when these things have been prepared, the priest always went in the first part of the tabernacle performing the services, but the second part, the high priest went alone once a year, not without blood, which he offered for himself and for the people's sins committed in ignorance. In verse 11 here, but Christ came as high priest of the good things to come, with the greater and more perfect tabernacle not made with hands, that is not of this creation, not with the blood of goats and calves, but with his own blood he entered the most holy place once for all, having obtained eternal redemption. But we don't need the Ark of the Covenant anymore, representing God's presence with us, because Christ came and paid the price for our forgiveness. We don't need the blood sprinkled on the ark anymore. His blood took the place of that blood. The ark represented the throne of God among his people. Today, the veil that hid the ark from view has been torn. We have God now, open to us today. We have God's Holy Spirit in us today. And because of that, we don't need this physical reminder that God is with us. He now lives in us. We no longer need someone to sprinkle blood on the mercy seat for us because the blood of Christ now cleanses us. We can each Sabbath or whenever approach God directly for forgiveness, so we don't need an ark for that hidden behind a veil among us anymore. That veil was torn at Christ's crucifixion. That's Matthew 27:51, symbolizing the direct access we now have to God. But one last thought. Where is this ark today? I'll read from a Wikipedia site just because it came up and I thought it was fun. It was Raiders of the Lost Ark, the Indiana Jones movie about searching for that lost Ark of the Covenant. This is Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's a 1981 American action-adventure film directed by Steven Spielberg, set in 1936. The film starred Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones. I saw that long ago, I'm sure. Those are all good movies. A globe-trotting archaeologist vying with Nazi German forces to recover the long-lost Ark of the Covenant, which is said to make armies invincible. I don't think they read about the experience of the Philistines when they got it. Jones races to stop rival archaeologist René Belloc from guiding the Nazis to the Ark and its power. And I think they found the Ark in that movie, didn't they? Josh, I kind of remember opening that. But do we know where it is today? I'll just read from Revelation 11. That's the two witnesses chapter, the time of the return of Christ in verse 19. Then the temple of God was opened in heaven, and the Ark of His covenant was seen in His temple. And there were lightnings, noises, thunderings, and an earthquake, and great hail. So that time of the second coming, the Ark of the Covenant was seen in His temple. Wouldn't it be fun to see it someday with the gold bowl containing the manna, with Aaron's rod, with the tablets and the Ten Commandments written by God's hand, all central parts of God's Spirit family plan? I hope that we might.